Did you know, thanks to the local foods movement, a whole new generation has taken an interest in canning and food preservation? Hi everyone, I'm Julie Halas, and this is Did You Know, an Iowa State University Extension and Outreach podcast brought to you in partnership with Siouxland Public Media. Today, I'm visiting with Renee Swears, Nutrition and Wellness Specialist for Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. Hi, Renee. How are you doing?
Hi, Julie. I'm well.
So, Renee, what's with this canning business? I'm seeing it. I'm reading about it. I'm having my friends talk about it. It just seems like a resurgence. What's going on out there?
It is a resurgence, and it's very exciting because anytime people are interested in their food and what they're eating, and some of it is based on wanting to eat healthier or safer food, so it's very exciting to see this uptick in people doing food preservation.
Well, recently, Renee, I saw a magazine on a rack in a store that sells a lot of organic and local foods, and the magazine was talking about this resurgence and a new generation coming into this. And I wondered, is there a tie-in with the local foods movement? Is it generational? Who's showing up for these classes, Renee?
You know, it really is amazing, all the younger people, millennials or people that are maybe a little older than that, that really maybe don't have any food preservation experience. Of course, some of them do. Some of them have ties to maybe what grandma did years ago, but a lot of them don't have any tie with that, but they've started gardening or they're just very interested in eating more local foods and they're very interested in knowing what is in their food. Mm-hmm. So if I'm preserving my own tomatoes rather than buying it off the shelf, yeah, I know exactly what is in that jar of tomatoes. So,
well, and I'm noticing, like, I'm getting jars of preserved food for gifts now for Christmas. I see the kind of the economizing, yet that kind of personal touch.
Right. And the other thing that's happening in this whole world of food preservation is there's really been a lot of creative recipes and a lot of upscale sorts of things.
Yeah.
So it's fun to see where this is going, and it's not just basic, you know, canned tomatoes and dill pickles. So,
okay, so how long have you been teaching food preservation, Renee?
Well, I've worked for Extension for 24 years. So
you've been there long enough to see whether this is a trend and all the different issues that have come up.
Oh, absolutely. And I would say the first 10 years, we had publications on food preservation,
yeah,
and when people called with a question, we would refer them to our publication. But it wasn't, we didn't have too many people contacting us. As we started to see the uptick in the interest in this, then we started offering more classes. Right now, all of our master gardeners in Woodbury County, anyhow, get training on food preservation. So we're really trying to get the word out. Now we offer workshops and, you know, all kinds of things. So it is very exciting.
Well, okay. So I have a garden and I've been doing salsa for years, but I've just been doing like a refrigerator version of it because it always intimidated me to try to preserve something. Mm-hmm. It's like, ooh, that's an awesome responsibility. And, you know, you hear these scary stories about preserving gone bad.
Right.
What do you recommend to the beginner?
So first of all, you do need to kind of do your homework, mm-hmm, on how to safely do food preservation. You know, we always say it's fine to be creative in the kitchen. You know, look up recipes online for, I don't know, chicken casserole or cookies or whatever. And, you know, really make them any old way you want to. And it's fine, right?
Sure.
But when you seal a jar, and this is something that a lot of people don't realize, when you remove the oxygen from a jar,
yeah,
it really changes what you're doing in the kitchen, and you can really create some very unsafe environments and even deadly environments in that food. And so, like you said, you actually have been taking a very wise approach to that salsa,
yeah,
since you didn't necessarily know how to can.
Yes.
Just doing the refrigerator version is always a safe way to approach that. So we always say tested sites. So we recommend the National Center for Home Food Preservation. We recommend Ball, which the website for that is Ball Fresh Preserving. And those are the two main sites. And then any extension service should be using reliable tested recipes. And they're probably using the recipes from the National Center for Home Food Preservation, actually. So a great place to start is at your local extension office, because they will have some resources on food preservation. And they might even have some classes coming up in that area that people could take advantage of to really sort of learn the basics.
Well, in Extension, you're based out of the Woodbury County office in Iowa here. Extension has been around for over 100 years. Have you guys been teaching food preservation that whole time? I mean, it's something.
I would say they probably have been. Yeah. And, you know, so if you think of what is one niche that Extension has, I do believe safe food preservation is one of the niches that we have. But of course, you know, we've developed it a lot more in the last 15 years just because of the high level of interest that we have now.
Well,
out
and
in the
I
state.
I always heard about people bringing pressure cookers into the Extension office for testing. Is that necessary anymore, or how have pressure cookers changed over the years?
Well, one great thing about pressure cookers is that they have a lot more safety mechanisms built onto them. But if you are using a dial gauge pressure canner, you still need to have that gauge tested to be sure that it is accurate.
Okay.
You know, so that still is something that we would recommend people do if they have a dial gauge pressure canner.
You mentioned that it's not enough just to know how to seal that jar. It's all about what the recipe is inside. Can you give us more details? Why does that matter so much?
Well, that is really a common misconception that if the jar is sealed, it safely can. It's actually not that difficult to have a jar seal. That doesn't mean that the product inside is safe. So some of the things that you need to take into consideration is the acidity of the product. And then the other thing is the density of the food that's in that jar, the size of the jar, because you need an adequate heat penetration to the center of the jar where it's coldest. And so all of that, you know, it's really a scientific formula, all of that is.
Yeah.
And so that's why when people are doing food preservation, they should be using these tested recipes and following them very precisely. I tend to be somebody who just sort of throws things together when I cook. I don't usually follow recipes. But when I am doing food preservation, I am as precise as a scientist in a lab. I'm very, very careful.
What are some of the things that the recipes that are appropriate have in them that some of these other rogue recipes out there that haven't been tested, what are some of the differences between them?
Well, some might be acidity. They may be a combination of, because vegetables would be low in acid. Unless they've been acidified, they would require to be canned in a pressure canner. Yeah. And so sometimes some of the recipes that I've seen that have been from, you know, just various offshoot places, it would appear that they're probably not quite as acidic as what the tested recipe for the same version of that product is. So there's acidity. And then the other thing is even procedures. So just let me give you an example about, you know, in the stores, you can buy pureed pumpkin that's in a can, right? People buy that and make pumpkin pie out of that.
Yeah.
You can buy pumpkin butter, spread on your toast. So those are products that they can can commercially, but we really can't safely can at home. There's no tested recipes for those products at home. They're very, because they have pureed pumpkin in them, they're very, very dense. And because the pumpkin is low acid, it's very difficult to figure out how to safely do that at home. So that would be an example of, you might find a recipe for that. And you might find a pumpkin butter recipe that you could make, but then, like you said, with your salsa, refrigerate it. Don't put it in a jar and seal it. So processing times is another thing that would be part of a tested recipe. So the processing time would involve getting that adequate heat to the coldest part of the jar. And so sometimes with untested recipes, people might have cookbooks in their cupboard. That's maybe the community cookbook or the school cookbook or the church cookbook. There might be some recipes for preserved products that are actually very unsafe. They don't have adequate processing times. Perhaps they're not using methods that are even safe, like, for example, oven canning. That's super popular.
Oven canning is a thing.
Oven canning is a thing. And if only it really was a good thing, because think how much easier that would be.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Stick the jars in the oven. At some point, you shut the oven off, you let the jars cool, and ta-da. And actually, when people do that, usually the jars do seal. But again, the kind of heat you have in an oven is not a direct heat. And then when we compare that to the kind of heat you have when you submerge a jar in like boiling water, or when you submerge a jar into a pressure canner, you know, it's very different kind of heat. So again, just because that jar sealed in the oven, it's not a safe procedure. There's no tested recipes for that. One thing that happens sometimes, and this is a good thing, is if people don't can food correctly, sometimes the lid pops off of the jar after a certain amount of time, and they'll see that it's got mold growing in it or whatever, and then people don't eat it.
Yeah.
But that is the thing that you can't count on. So the culprit that we're concerned about in the no oxygen environment is Clostridium botulinum. And that bacteria can be found in soil. And so when we do our food preservation, if there's still some of that bacteria on the product, and then we put it in a sealed jar, we seal the jar, we remove the oxygen, that particular bacteria is unusual in that it likes to grow in a no oxygen environment. It produces a toxin, which is a poison, and that toxin is not destroyed even by boiling. Mm. So that's why for a low acid food, you need a pressure canner. So, you know, that really is the biggest reason at Extension that we are involved in food preservation education, is so that people do not become ill from their food with Clostridium botulinum. It's one of the deadliest toxins in the world. So, yeah.
Are there a lot of cases of people getting sick like through that?
Every year there are some. There are actually more in the western part of the United States, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure if that's because of needing to adjust more for altitude or if it's more prevalent in the soil, but it certainly does happen. And there was, I believe it was in 2015, there was a fairly large outbreak. A woman had incorrectly canned potatoes, and then she made potato salad out of them and took them to like a potluck type of event.
Sure.
So a lot of people consumed them and a lot of people got sick, thankfully. No one died, but that's the biggest Clostridium botulinum outbreak that we've had for a while. Yeah.
So with the canning comes a responsibility.
A definite responsibility.
To can wisely, especially, yes. You know, if it's for your family, you're sharing it with your friends. There's kind of an awesome responsibility if you think about it.
Right.
You mentioned, we have a lot of change with how people get their information now, and they're going online to look up recipes. And so a concern is that they're not necessarily approved recipes.
They're not necessarily from a tested site.
So just because you see it online doesn't mean it's okay.
Absolutely not. Yeah. So how do you deal with that then? Okay, let's say you have, you know, grandma's apple butter recipe that she canned for years. And as far as you know, nobody got sick from it, right? And you really like that. Okay, and now you want to make apple butter. So you take grandma's recipe, and then you go to the tested sites and you look at the apple butter recipes that they have and you find the one that closest matches grandma's. And then that's the one you make. So that's really the best suggestion that we have.
So compare the recipes with tested site recipes. And what were those sites again that we should really be referencing when we're looking and comparing references?
Well, any extension service would be able to help you. Yep.
Okay.
And then Ball Fresh Preserving.
And Ball is the company that makes a lot of the canning supplies.
They do make a lot of canning supplies, and they sell a fair amount of, you know, canning cookbooks.
Sure.
One of the things with Ball is, you know, they have this infamous Ball Blue Book that's been around for many, many years. And a lot of people have Ball Blue Book in their cookbook cupboards. But there's another point to bring out is that older canning recipes or whatever, even if they were from a tested site, if they're older, they would not be considered necessarily to be safe now. So we're saying that if you have a Ball Blue Book, you should have a version that is newer than 2009.
2009.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. And so really that would apply to, you know, any of the tested recipe sites. Even our extension publications, we revise those, you know, every few years based on the new science related to food preservation.
So look at those recipes and make sure that you compare them with the latest versions from Ball and from your extension service. When in doubt, just call your extension office, right? And
absolutely.
Talk to somebody there who can take a look at your recipe.
Yes.
Don't preserve in the oven. Don't do that method, right? That is dangerous and you shouldn't do that. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And pressure cookers, when do I use a water bath and when do I use a pressure cooker?
Good question. So we need to start with the acidity of the product that we're canning. So if we just say in general, fruits are acidic and can be canned in a water bath. Vegetables are low acid and need to be canned in a pressure canner. There are a few exceptions, and that would be sometimes we are acidifying vegetables, right? Mm-hmm. When we make pickles, we're acidifying vegetables. When we make salsa, we acidify the vegetables because we add vinegar or lemon juice, right? So you would be using that tested site, and it's going to tell you whether it needs to be water bath canned or whether it needs to be pressure canned. So that's not even a decision you'll have to make on your own,
so
right?
So the recipes will tell you which method to use how long to process.
Yep. So if you are on a tested site, there's no mystery to that. And the other thing we say is don't don't try to memorize your food preservation techniques, right?
Yeah.
Every time that you can tomatoes, pull out the tested source and see exactly how to do it, exactly what the processing time is, exactly how much acid to add. That's one thing that is recommend for tomato canning is that you acidify them, even though people think of tomatoes as being acidic.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
But think about all the varieties of tomatoes that are out there. Yeah. And then even the soil that they're grown in and the weather, that can all affect the acidity of the tomato. We do want people, and this is not a new recommendation, to put some acid in every single jar of tomatoes that they can, whether they're canning them in the water bath or the pressure canner.
Yeah.
And all the tested sites will have the guidelines for that. It's either lemon juice or it's purchased powdered citric acid.
So where does vinegar play into this?
You could add vinegar. The guidelines do give you recommendations for the quantity of vinegar to add. And obviously the amount of acid that you add to a pint jar is different than the amount you would add to a quart jar.
Mm-hmm.
But the quantity of vinegar is actually double what you would add for lemon juice. So it ends up being quite a lot of vinegar, which is probably going to really affect the flavor of your canned tomatoes. So.
Okay. But is vinegar considered an acid?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
And so when you can salsa, that's usually the acid source.
That's the acid.
Is vinegar, right?
Okay.
And then you have tomatoes in the salsa, which have some acid in them.
Yeah.
But then you also have some low acid vegetables, right? Peppers
and onions.
Yep. Yeah. So that just points out, and I think salsa is one example of a preserved recipe that people like to sort of get creative on. And
yeah.
They think, oh, I've got so many peppers this year.
Oh, yes.
I'll just add more than what the recipe calls for.
Portions,
right?
Yes.
And so then that's going to change the acidity of the product, right?
So be exact, even with peppers and onions.
Absolutely. And... Absolutely, right?
Okay.
The one thing in salsa that you can vary up is the type of pepper. Let's say if the tested recipe is calling for just a sweet bell pepper and you really want to make it hotter, whatever the quantity of the sweet pepper that the recipe calls for, you can substitute hotter varieties of pepper in there to intensify that heat in your salsa. You just can't change the quantity.
So what about, like, I see these little seasoning packets usually in the preservation area. Do those affect it at all? Or if you just follow the recipe on the seasoning packet, if it's by one of those companies that produces the cans, is it generally a safe thing to do?
A couple of the brands that we are most familiar with, we have been in contact with the National Center for Home Food Preservation, and they are saying yes, that if you are following, if you follow, use the seasoning packet, follow that recipe exactly, you should be fine.
Now, pressure cookers. I am seeing a resurgence of pressure cooking. I mean, they've got these special pots now that everybody is using. They brown the meat in them. They're a little bit smaller than what I think would be the traditional canning pressure cooker.
Right.
But you can brown meat, you can turn them into a crock pot, and then you can pressure cook with
them. Right.
Are those the kind of things you should be using for canning? If you're doing smaller jars, is that acceptable? Or have you seen these, Renee?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And people have lots of questions about them.
Yes.
It's so tempting, isn't it? Like you have a pressure cooker.
It's like everything in one. You don't have to buy a separate pressure cooker.
Exactly.
People think, but is that true?
Yes. No, it is not true. So like you've been saying the word pressure cooker, and that is what they are. They're for cooking under pressure.
Okay.
Which really speeds up the process. It will tenderize meat. Even if you have a meat that has a lot of connective tissue in it, it will tenderize it very well. It'll cook vegetables fast. It cooks dried beans very fast. So, and you know, the units that you've probably seen are sort of like a slow cooker where you just set it on the counter and plug it in.
Yeah.
So that's great for pressure cooking. So pressure canning is a different story, and there are no electric plug-in pressure canners at this time. All pressure canners would be something that you would be putting on top of the stove. So to be a pressure canner, it has to be big enough to hold 5-quart jars. Not 5 quarts of water, 5-quart jars. And the reason is because the processing time for pressure canning includes the time that it takes for the pressure to get up to, say, 11 pounds of pressure, and then also the decompression is part of the processing time. And so, you know, that's just something that people don't often think about.
Yeah. And I can see where people get confused.
Exactly.
And so pressure, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so then you think, okay, in a large pressure canner, it is going to take a lot longer for that pressure to get up and a lot longer for that pressure to go down than in one of these small pressure cookers that sits on a counter. So yeah, they are much to our dismay because it would be so convenient. But, you know, I guess that's one of the things is there aren't really shortcuts. In food preservation and in canning, anyhow, there aren't really shortcuts. So when you think that you found this brilliant workaround to make it easier or quicker or whatever, it may not be safe, and then you need to double check.
Need to double check. There are no shortcuts in canning. It's a labor of love.
It is completely a labor of love. And as much as I hate to say it, you have to be very careful in following that recipe exactly. So there's not a lot of creativity like you can do in cooking. And I guess that's where it's sort of fun to see these last few years that the tested recipes are now becoming more creative. And so that's where finding some of those more creative tested recipes, I've had a lot of fun with that the last few years because now there are more of those available. So
you mentioned pumpkin before. Is there anything else that if you get from a well-meaning person that you should probably proceed with caution as far as things that are canned? Pumpkin was one. Is there any other ones?
Yeah. Well, I mean, anything that you receive from someone else, you don't necessarily know if it was canned safely, right?
True.
Now, one thing I would say the least hazardous mm-hmm. of all canned products are jams and jellies.
Yeah, okay.
And as long as they form a gel, they have such a high sugar content. And usually they're made from a fruit. So we have some acidity there. So those tend to be the safest of any home canned product. And that's also what you see sold at a farmer's market.
Okay.
Are jams and jellies.
Yes.
Right. That are made from fruit. But any vegetable that's canned, I always approach those with caution. Let's just say that.
Okay. And jams and jellies now, I've gotten gifts from people that of jam and jelly, and there's wax on top.
Oh.
What's that about?
That's a very...
Paraffin wax?
Yes. That's a very old-fashioned way of creating the seal in the jar. My grandmother did that.
Okay.
I've always thought it was fun to pop that wax off of there. That would definitely not be considered to be a safe procedure anymore.
So that's very old school.
Very old
school. To see wax on top of
it. Yes. Okay. And sometimes when people would remove that wax, they would find some mold growing under
there. Oh, my. Okay.
Yeah. Another old-fashioned way of doing canning is what we call open kettle canning. Mm. And that means there's no processing time. So you put the hot product in the hot jar, you put the two-piece lid on it, screw it down, and then you just leave it sit on the counter. Will the jars seal? Most likely they will. They will. But remember, that doesn't mean you did it safely. And in this case, you didn't do it safely because you had no processing time. You had no water bath processing, had no pressure canner processing. So that is another very, very old school way of doing food preservation that is not safe at all.
That's good to know. What else can you tell me about, for a person just starting off with this, you probably recommend taking an extension course in this, or do you offer that type of thing, Renee?
So in Iowa, we have our food preservation goes under the name Preserve the Taste of Summer. And so we have an online course. Mm-hmm. It's 8 lessons, and that's where we want people to start. So for a very modest fee, they go in and take the online lessons on their own. Then they can participate in a hands-on workshop. We have 4 different workshops that we do. We do a water bath workshop, which also includes freezing. We do a fruit spreads, jam or jelly workshop, which also includes dehydration. We do a pickle workshop, and we do a pressure canning workshop. So once people have completed the online lessons, then they qualify for a workshop. People in education may be familiar with the term flipped classroom. That's what this is. It's a flipped classroom. They're getting the background education, learning about the science and the procedures and all of that from the online course. So then when they come to the workshop, we can really spend the bulk of our time just doing the food preservation. So that's kind of the way we have decided to approach our food preservation education.
Okay, so it starts off with a course called Preserve the Taste of Summer.
Preserve the Taste of Summer, and you register for that from our website, and you can watch those lessons at your own leisure. They don't take that much time, maybe an hour per lesson. Some of them aren't even that long.
Any other cautionary things people need to think of before they dive into this world of food preservation for safety?
Well, not just for safety, but even for, people do assume sometimes that it's going to be a lot less expensive. And, just think about it. If you have to buy a pressure canner and you have to buy jars and you have to buy lids. So you should do this because you want to do it, not because you think you're going to save a lot of money. The other thing is, if you took your time into consideration,
yes.
I always say that is a really expensive jar of green beans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once you take your time into consideration. But, you know, you're doing it for the joy of putting up your own food. You're doing it for the self-satisfaction that you feel. Like in my case, I'm a gardener, so it feels really good to know that product that we did not eat fresh and product that we didn't give away, we still were able to preserve that and we'll be able to enjoy that throughout the year. So it's very rewarding. But a couple of things that people need to think about is, first of all, the jars. We do recommend that you use a canning jar or a Kerr. There's still some of the old Kerr jars around. Jarden is another brand name that you might see. Those were actually developed for multiple heat treatments. So could you use a glass mayonnaise jar that you just washed out and decided to can on? You know, you actually could, but you're much more likely to have jar breakage during mm-hmm. that processing time. And yeah. I just think, oh, it's so disheartening if you look in your canner after the processing time and there's salsa floating in there.
Yeah. Yes. That would be so sad.
Yeah. So I try to do everything I can to make it as successful as possible. Yeah. You want to be sure that you're using jars that were meant for canning. Obviously, the equipment. Mm-hmm. Now, for a water bath, you don't need some special pan, but it needs to be big enough that you can have a couple inches of water above the top of the jar and then mm-hmm. a couple inches of airspace above that, because in the water bath canning, it's going to be a very rapid boil. Mm-hmm. So it's going to boil really fast. You have to have space on the top of that pan for that to occur.
And what about the racks that you put underneath?
You need to have a rack, and that is just for good water circulation.
Circulation.
Yeah.
Okay.
So depending on the size of jar and what the product is, and also your stove. Obviously, a flat top stove is a little trickier mm-hmm. with canning. Yeah. Gas stoves are the ideal. It doesn't mean you can't can on a flat top stove. You should look at your book. You should look at the manufacturer's recommendations.
And what's the challenge of a flat top? It doesn't get water hot enough, or what's the...
Well, one challenge is if the bottom of your water bath canner is not perfectly flat. A typical pot that people do water bath canning in mm-hmm. is the kind of blue mottled mm-hmm. kind of enamel.
That speckled one that you see in the store.
The speckled one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the bottom of the $20 one or whatever has some ripples in it. It's almost like a built-in rack. That's not going to work really the best on a mm-hmm. flat top. So because you don't have that heat contact.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas like on a gas stove or even a coil electric stove, you'll have better heat contact with something like that. So you'd want to, if you have a flat top stove, you want to be sure you're putting the flattest pan as possible on top of it. The other thing with some electric stoves is they cycle. Mm-hmm. So you might have it turned on high, but it's not necessarily on high all the time. If I have a gas stove and whatever I have that set on, it doesn't make up its own mind to cycle. And then the other thing, of course, with an electric stove, especially if you're pressure canning, is the way you control the pressure is by adjusting the heat. Well, that's a little trickier on an electric stove because when I turn it down, it doesn't automatically go down.
True.
Right?
True.
When I turn a gas stove down, it automatically reduces the heat. So you just have to, you know, kind of watch that. So there's that. There's the stove. There's the pan. You can definitely can on a flat top stove, but it's just, you know, it's just trickier. The lids, you want to use the two-piece lids. There's a flat and there's a screw band. And again, years ago, people used one-piece lids, and
yeah.
there's no tested recipes anymore for one-piece lids,
okay.
so we don't recommend that. Another thing for people to think about is the actual produce that they're using. So occasionally over the years, I've gotten calls at the extension office with people saying, so these tomatoes are about to go bad, and I wonder what you thought about me canning them or freezing them. You know, preserving them isn't going to improve the quality. You always want to start with the highest quality product as fresh as possible. If it's possible to pick it in the morning before the hot sun beats down on it and preserve it that day, that's the ideal. Sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes you may have to refrigerate it for a day or two, but the freshest product possible. You also need a chunk of time
yes.
that you're not going to be interrupted.
So how much on average does it take to do this?
Well, if you're just making a batch of jam, you know, you can probably get that done in a couple of hours, including the processing time and everything. If you're making a salsa that requires a lot of chopping, that'll take a little bit longer. If you're making a tomato sauce that you need to, for example, I made one this year that I needed to reduce the quantity. Once I got it all pureed and ready, I needed to reduce the quantity in half. That took quite a while to cook that down. So it really
sure.
depends on what you're making. In our workshops, we allow ourselves 4 hours. Most of the time, it doesn't take the full four hours. We probably could get it done in about 3 hours. But again, that depends on what we're canning. So you need a time where young children aren't going to be interrupting you. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have to stop and, you know, run a kid to football practice or...
So you need to be present. You can't just let it boil and take off and run
an errand. You have to be present. And people are fearful sometimes of the pressure canner. And you do need to be respectful of the pressure canner. But the main thing is just stay in the kitchen and watch it.
Yes.
You know, stay in the kitchen. Don't go to the laundry room and lose track of what you're doing. You need to stay in the kitchen to be sure that it's at the pounds of pressure the entire time when you're processing it. And with the boiling water bath, you need to be sure that it's boiling and that you have enough water in it the entire time that it's processing. So mm-hmm. it's not really a time that you can multitask and dovetail and do a lot of other things when you're canning.
You don't want to have exploding jars or breaking jars or the heat not maintaining itself.
Absolutely, yeah. The other thing, Julie, that I guess I'd like to mention is people need to research their altitude for where they live. So in Northwest Iowa, we are between 1,000 and 2,000 feet above sea level. So we do have to adjust our altitude in this part of the state for food preservation. And so if you look at any of the tested sites, they will tell you how to do that. In our case, we had 5 minutes to the processing time. This is sometimes where our 4-H'ers get in trouble. Maybe they have brought a jar of strawberry jam that they canned, and they forgot to adjust the processing time. So the processing time in the Ball Blue Book said 10 minutes.
It should be 15
here. It should be 15 for us, right. And then the way we adjust in our part of the state, the way we adjust in the pressure canner is we increase the pressure by 1 pound. Mm-hmm. So if it's telling us to process at 11 pounds of pressure, then we would process at 12 pounds of pressure. Most of the state of Iowa will need to adjust for altitude. Mm-hmm. Southeast Iowa does not need to. And then Black Hawk County does not need to.
Okay.
But most of the rest of the state is going to need to adjust for altitude.
So it was 5 additional minutes if you're in this area and 1 additional pound.
Right, for the pressure canner. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else, Renee, as far as canning and food preparation? Any words of wisdom for those brave young folks out there going to give it their first try?
I really encourage them. I think sometimes they hear about sort of these rules sort of that I've been talking about, and they might feel intimidated. Don't. Get your facts, and you'll be able to do it, and you'll be able to do it just fine. And it is incredibly rewarding. But get your facts from a tested site. If you have the opportunity to go to an extension education program, will greatly boost your confidence. The other thing is we do have folks who are not canning correctly, and they may say something like, well, I've done it this way for 40 years and nobody's gotten sick. But just like so many other things that are based on science, they change over time. There's a whole lot of things that we don't do the same way we did 40 years ago. And so we want people to stay up to date with this as well. And even if grandma's saying, well, nobody's ever gotten sick, it's sort of like Russian roulette. We don't want anybody to get sick, especially with Clostridium botulinum. And then just as an aside, of course, there are 2 other ways to preserve food. There's freezing, which doesn't have the food safety issues with it, and even doesn't have the necessity to have a tested recipe. So if you have a favorite salsa recipe and, you know, it didn't come from one of these tested sources, it's just one your neighbor gave you, and you want to preserve it, go ahead and make it and freeze it. Perfectly fine. All right. And then drying foods as well. The thing with drying food, of course, is if you don't dry it adequately, it's probably going to get moldy. Mm-hmm. But there aren't the food safety issues with freezing and with drying.
So when in doubt, you can make it and put it in your refrigerator, or you can make it and freeze it.
Absolutely.
Or dry it down if it's a vegetable.
Yep.
And but don't be afraid of canning.
Don't be afraid of food preservation. It is very rewarding. So I encourage people, if they are interested, to give it a try. Contact their local extension office for some resources. You can go on our website and get publications. You can go on our website to sign up for an online course and workshop. And they're a lot of fun.
Thank you, Renee, for visiting with me today about
Thank you, Julie.
Food preservation and canning. This has been Did You Know? An Iowa State University Extension and Outreach podcast. Today, we have visited with Renee Swears, a nutrition and wellness specialist with Iowa State University Extension and Outreach.